Hello and welcome to another edition of Yellow Star China News. Today is Tuesday, January 8th, 2019. The first article for today comes from The Guardian, entitled Most Extraordinary Millennial. Why does China focus on Kim Jong-un's age? In China, Kim Jong-un is regarded not only as North Korea's supreme leader, he is a millennial. As Kim arrived in Beijing on Monday for a three-day visit, Chinese media went out of their way to flatter the young leader. The millennial who commands the wind and clouds has arrived in Beijing, wrote Liu Hong, the Chinese editor of a Xinhua affiliate, on his public WeChat account. To come to China for heart-to-heart ahead of such momentous change is a sign of the complexity of the situation and the ability of the millennial to seize the moment. Other publications republished Liu's commentary. Chinese state media have often highlighted Kim's age. In 2010, as it became clear Kim would be the successor to his father, Kim Jong-il, People's Daily, the official newspaper of the Communist Party, dedicated a page to Kim, describing him as world's the most extraordinary millennial. In 2012, a CCTV special on Kim hailed him for bringing in a younger officials into his government. By referring to Kim as a millennial, specifically a Bailingho, or post-80s, a generation in China who grew up in the relative comfort of China's reform era, is not entirely complimentary. In China, they are often described as self-indulgent, spoiled, and lacking resilience. Among netizens, Kim is often referred to as Zuanyo de Bailingho, or the most badass millennial. For Kim, the emphasis on his youth serves as a veiled insult. In a country where the average age of senior officials was 63 in 2012, the most recent leadership transition, ties between Pyongyang and Beijing, its closest ally, deteriorated after Kim took office. It's serving a dual purpose. Both suggest that based on his youth, he could be the right kind of reformer, and as a bit of a put-down, said Mintaro Oba, a former U.S. diplomat. Beijing is happy to be positive toward Kim and North Korea as long as they establish a hierarchical relationship. They don't want to put Kim on equal terms with Xi, he said. Kim's trip to Beijing this week follows three visits to China last year. A sign ties may be improving, but the relationship remains complicated. Underlying everything is the fact that North Korea resents being so dependent on Beijing, and China wishes North Korea would be a more pliable, less provocative vassal state that embraces the Chinese model of economic reform, Oba said. The second article for today comes from Channel News Asia, entitled North Korea's Kim in China after warning of alternative path to Trump talks. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is visiting China at the invitation of Chinese President Xi Jinping only days after warning he may take an alternative path if the United States does not ease sanctions and pressure on his country. The visit, confirmed by North Korean and Chinese state media, will likely lead to Kim's fourth summit with Xi in the past year, and comes amid plans for a second summit with U.S. President Donald Trump aimed at denuclearizing the Korean Peninsula. Kim held three summits last year with Xi, his most important ally, before and after summits with Trump and South Korean President Moon Jae-in. Kim is eager to remind the Trump administration that he does have diplomatic and economic options besides what Washington and Seoul can offer. Harry J. Kazinas, Director of Defense Studies at U.S.-based Center for the National Interest, said in an emailed statement. In fact, during his New Year's Day speech, Kim's new way that he referred to may well have been a veiled threat to move closer to Beijing. That should make America quite concerned. Kim left for China on a private train on Monday afternoon, accompanied by his wife, Ri Sol-ju, and senior North Korean officials, including Kim Yong-chol, a key negotiator in talks with the United States, and Foreign Minister Ri Yong-ho, North Korea's state-run KCNA news agency said. China's official Xinhua news agency confirmed that Kim was visiting from Monday to Thursday at Xi's invitation. A green train with a yellow stripe similar to one Kim took to Beijing last year arrived at a station in the Chinese capital on Tuesday morning amid tight security, though it was not clear if Kim and his party were on board. A motorcade with heavy security later drove through central Beijing. The visit coincided with what South Korean officials say is Kim's 35th birthday on Tuesday. Kim's visit to North Korea's most important economic and diplomatic ally, which was first reported by South Korean media, followed reports of advanced negotiations for a second summit between Washington and Pyongyang aimed at resolving the standoff over North Korea's nuclear program. Kim said in his New Year's speech he was ready to meet Trump any time to achieve their common goal of denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, but he warned that he may seek an alternative path if U.S. sanctions and pressure against the country continued. In an interview with CNBC on Monday, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo praised China's support for resolving the North Korean crisis and said he did not think the U.S. trade dispute with China would affect this. Kim's visit comes as a U.S. delegation opened a second day of talks with Chinese counterparts in Beijing, aimed at ending the trade war between the world's two largest economies. "The Chinese have been very clear to us that these are separate issues," Pompeo said. "Their behavior has demonstrated that as well, and we appreciate that. China has actually been a good partner in our efforts to reduce the risk to the world from North Korea's nuclear capability. I expect they will continue to do so." Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Liu Kang asked during a daily briefing whether there was a connection between Kim's visit and the possibility of another meeting between Kim and Trump. Said China believed contact between the United States and North Korea was important. "China has always supported both sides to continue to hold talks and to reach a positive outcome," Liu said. When asked if Kim's delegation might have contact with the U.S. trade delegation in Beijing, Liu said the two talks were not on the same level. Shu Yanhong, an international relations professor at Renmin University in Beijing, said Kim's trip would have no direct influence on the progress of trade talks. "From the other perspective, this is something that can indirectly be used to show the United States that China is not playing without any cards in hand." He added that Kim would certainly call on Xi Jinping to give North Korea more economic assistance. South Korea's presidential Blue House spokesman Kim Wae-kyung said separately on Thursday that South Korea hoped Kim's visit would contribute to efforts to secure permanent peace on the peninsula. "We especially hope that the exchange between China and North Korea this time will be a stepping stone for the second North Korea-U.S. summit," Kim said. While no details were released about an agenda in China, the North Korean leader has been seeking relief from sanctions, a peace declaration to formally end the 1950-1953 Korean War, and more investment. Ties between China and North Korea, which had frayed as Pyongyang stepped up its missile and nuclear tests up to late 2017, warmed over the past year as Kim engaged with China, South Korea, and the United States. The third article for today comes from The National Interest, entitled, "Should South Korea Participate in China's Belt and Road?" Last year, South Korean President Moon Jae-in declared that the Republic of Korea wanted to participate in the Chinese One Belt, One Road, OBOR, initiative in Chongqing. And this year, Liaoning Province decided to join China's OBOR link to the Korean Peninsula. "Although South Korea is an important U.S. ally, why would it want to participate in the Chinese OBOR? There are four reasons. First, connecting South Korea to the rest of Eurasia by the OBOR has symbolic meaning for South Koreans. Since the outbreak of the Korean War nearly 70 years ago, South Korea has been disconnected from the continent, effectively becoming an island since it could no longer access North Korean territory. Many South Koreans have sought to reconnect with the rest of Asia to escape from their isolation, where the country felt more similar to Japan and the United Kingdom than a country with a 1,000-year-old culture and a shared history with their northern neighbors. Korean constitutional law even includes North Korean territory under South Korea's domain, Article 3. Thus, the present division between the two Koreas brings many contradictions to the forefront of South Korean society. If South Korea could connect with North Korea through China's OBOR, then Seoul can overcome these contradictions and fulfill the Korean people's long-held wish. Second, President Moon expects that participation in the initiative will mitigate tensions between South Korea and North Korea by creating joint economic opportunities. If South Korea connects with China through North Korea, South Korea can use multimodal transportation, the ability to transport cargo by land, air, and sea. This will increase the efficiency of South Korean trade, and its partners will become more varied than before. But South Korea would need to rebuild North Korea's train infrastructure because it is too decrepit to use. After rebuilding the train system, South Korea can resume business with North Korea at the Kaesong Industrial Complex and Kumgang Mountain. These investments and a new broader economic relationship could help mitigate tensions on the Korean Peninsula. Third, South Korea seeks to pioneer a new emerging market and expand its economic area. Last year, President Moon declared that the OBOR initiative and Moon's new policies towards Southeast Asia and North Asia have a close relationship. "I am confident a link between the Belt and Road Initiative and New North, New South policies will lead to peace and joint prosperity in the region," He said, if South Korean trains connect with China's railway system, South Korea can export its commodities to Central and Southeast Asia more easily. This is especially true since President Moon is expanding South Korea's economic ties with ASEAN as much as the other countries who surround the Korean Peninsula, like Japan, China, and Russia. In the past decade, ASEAN became the second largest market to South Korea after China. Given that 24.8% of South Korea's exports go to China, Seoul needs to expand its other markets to reduce its economic dependence, and therefore its political vulnerability, vis-a-vis Beijing. Indeed, South Korea had been confronted with Chinese political and economic pressure when Seoul decided to deploy the United States THADD system in response to North Korean missile threats. After political pressure from China, South Korea wants to focus on developing new markets, so participation in the OBOR is attractive to Seoul. Fourth, South Korea can get energy resources more easily, variously, and cheaply than before. South Korea is the third largest importer of liquefied natural gas, LNG, after Japan and Korea, Japan and China, and South Korea will soon buy even more natural gas than before because President Moon is planning to replace South Korean nuclear and coal power plants with natural gas and renewable energy. But LNG is more expensive than pipeline natural gas, PNG. South Korea currently has to buy natural gas in its liquefied state because it can't access the pipelines across North Korean territory. If South Korea can import PNG from Central Asia via China or from Russia, it can remarkably reduce the cost to import natural gas. 80% of South Korean gas imports currently come from five countries, with a high dependence on the Middle East and Australia. South Korea needs alternatives from energy imports, so they cannot be blocked or hindered by another country's resource nationalism, a financial crisis, or security reason. Through the One Belt, One Road initiative, South Korea can raise the funds to build the pipeline and connect with Central Asia and other countries too. The above four reasons are why South Korea wants to participate in China's OBOR initiative, but it should not do so lightly. There are three consequences that Seoul must consider before it participates in the OBOR. First, the financial cost of participation is very high because the South Korean and North Korean trade systems are so different. North Korea's double-track ratio is just 4%, meaning the majority of North Korea's rail system can only handle a single train moving in one direction at a time. Then there is the problem of energy. South Korea's trains operate at 25,000 volts, but North Korea's run at 3,000. To use North Korea's train system, South Korea has to rebuild the North's current rail infrastructure, which uses more electricity than North Korea generates. Another problem is that North Korea's current electricity production is just 4% of South Korea's, so Seoul would need to invest in both North Korea's rail system and electricity generation. According to a report by the South Korea Financial Services Commission, the cost of developing North Korea's train lines and resolving its power shortages is $87.7 billion. Given the estimated cost of rebuilding North Korean infrastructure, South Korea must consider how it will pay the tremendous bill. Second is a security risk that is related to trust and leverage. If South Korea participates in China's OBOR, Seoul may be confronted with a troubling security situation. It is true that South Korea can curtail the cost of energy imports by using Russian or Central Asian pipeline infrastructure. But should South Korea put its trust in energy security in the hands of North Korea? As has happened before, North Korea can change its relationship with Seoul based on how it perceives its national interest. This creates a possibility that Pyongyang could put a lot of pressure on Seoul by stopping energy supplies to the south. Seoul also can't guarantee financial business stability for South Korean companies working with the North. Upon a change in South Korea's government, North Korea can forfeit South Korean facilities or end its business with South Korean companies. For example, during the last South Korea administration, a business owner who participated in the Kaesong industrial complex didn't get enough recompense from the government. With such a track record, how could South Korean companies have faith in Seoul's encouragement to develop economic ties with North Korea? Regarding China, the situation is similar. South Korea's intention to participate in the OBOR initiative is to reduce its dependence on China as a destination for its exports. But if South Korea participates in the OBOR initiative, the dependency ratio is likely to increase further because China's reason for including South Korea in this initiative is to develop its northeast provinces. China will use South Korea to develop the region as a hub of northeast area. It means that South Korea is giving China a powerful card that could threaten Seoul in the future. Third, Moon's foreign policy could fail when South Korea's participation in the OBOR initiative. What President Moon expects from the initiative is for OBOR to be the connection between his new southern and new northern policies, thus expanding South Korea's economic and diplomatic influence. But the top nine ASEAN countries with the highest trade volume with South Korea are not participating in the One Belt, One Road project, or have suspended or cancelled their projects. In truth, most ASEAN countries have a skeptical view of this initiative. In August, Malaysian Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad cancelled the Chinese-funded $20 billion East Coast Rail Link (ECRL) and pipeline project. Singapore has been wary about Chinese projects like potentially building a canal or railway to bridge the KRA Isthmus, and does not have any OBOR-related projects on its territory. Pakistan and Thailand also reconsider OBOR initiative and cancelled it. Vietnam says it supports the initiative, but it doesn't participate in the initiative substantially. The most relevant countries with South Korea as ASEAN are hesitant to participate in the initiative. It is a similar situation with Moon's new northern policy. Moon's new northern policy is to cooperate with Russia, Mongolia, and Central Asia to focus on the various fields such as energy, railway transit, and the Arctic route. To attain this goal, South Korea wants to connect its new northern policy with OBOR by connecting the Trans-Korea Railway, TKR, and Trans-China Railway, TCR, to access Central Asia and Europe. But it is not a good idea for South Korea because Russia's Trans-Siberian Railway, TSR, is a better choice than TCR to approach this region. TCR is expensive, complicated, and less efficient than TSR since the basic fare for TCR is 30% higher, and Beijing gives preferential treatment to Chinese companies over foreign ones. Further, crossing each Central Asia border requires strict and time-consuming custom clearance and inspections. Yet the biggest problem is that TCR has a different gauge system which is not compatible with Russia and Central Asia. It means that it is necessary to switch trains at least once when the train approaches the border. It is a slow process, especially since the trade stations on the border don't have enough freight containers, especially in Central Asia. These are the reasons why South Korea's new southern and new northern policies and the OBOR initiative are not compatible with each other. In conclusion, the reward of the participation is very uncertain and the opportunity cost is very high. South Korea doesn't need to participate in this initiative. South Korea needs to look over its potential participation in the initiative with clear eyes so it can accurately estimate what the opportunity cost is for the South Korean people. The third article for today comes from the Daily NK, entitled "Store Selling Clothes Made by North Korean Laborers Opens in Dandong, Photos Reveal." A clothing store selling North Korean garments has recently opened in Dandong, China, and is proving quite popular, sources in the region report. In late November, a store selling clothes produced by North Korean laborers opened on the first floor of a building in downtown Dandong. The store sells affordable winter jumpers, hiking clothes, and exercise wear, a source in China reported to Daily NK on December 11th. The store has four or five female North Korean employees in their mid-20s. I asked them in Chinese about the products in the store, but they weren't able to respond in Chinese. The clothes in the store are popular due to their inexpensive prices, costing an average of 200 yuan. Some brands sold in the store are available on Chinese online shopping websites for six times the store price. The design and quality of the clothes are comparable to higher priced items, and some local residents have brought boxes to cart away their larger purchases. At least some of the clothes, however, appear to have slight defects. The store is essentially selling clothes produced by a Dandong-based clothes company that were damaged in the production process. The clothes normally go for more than 1,000 yuan, and despite having slight defects, are being sold for only 200 to 300 yuan. That's what makes them popular, said a separate source in China familiar with the shop. The existence of the store means that Chinese companies and the North Korean government have found ways to avoid international sanctions, observers say. The clothes are not produced in North Korea, but instead produced in Chinese companies staffed by North Korean workers who enter the country on work visa, and therefore not subject to United Nations Security Council imposed sanctions. That being said, another issue may exist. The clothing factory in question produces a variety of clothing brands, including those from South Korea's Kolon and the Chinese brand Kailas, which are being exported to South Korea, according to both sources. If that is true and the factory in question is a joint Sino-North Korean company, then the South Korean company would fall victim to a secondary boycott for having outsourced manufacturing to that factory. We have to look at all the possibilities. If this Chinese company just hired North Korean workers to make the clothes, then this might not be a sanctions violation, one North Korea analyst in South Korea told Daily NK on condition of anonymity. But there is a high possibility that some of the wages of the North Korean laborers at the factory are flowing back to the North Korean government's loyalty fund. This could cause an issue in the future. The fourth article for today comes from nknews.org, entitled Colored LEDs Installed Across Chinese Bridge to North Korea. Dandong's Friendship Bridge, which straddles the Yalu River between North Korea and China, was decorated back in December with color-changing LEDs across the full length of the structure, photos obtained by NK News show. Lights were tested on the normally poorly lit North Korean side of the bridge over the weekend, with the full structure eventually illuminated in rotating pink, green, blue, and cyan colors by Monday evening. They are brand new lights, an informed source told NK News. They've been installing them during the evening when there's no traffic for the past month. This is Chinese government related for sure, the source speculated as to where backing was likely coming from. Development is the latest in a series of changes which suggest greater cooperation between the two countries, with NK Pro analysis in November flagging China's role in improving infrastructure at 8 locations along the border. One North Korea observer said the development should therefore be seen as part of the broader trend. We should not read much into the current repair. It is largely cosmetic, but this cosmetic job had some political message nonetheless. Dr. Andrei Lankov, director of the Korea Risk Group, told NK News. The PRC-DPRK relationship is now better. Or to be more precise, China is again willing to foot North Korean bills, some of them at least, he said. Hence, the lights are on. The Friendship Bridge, which in 2015 was said to represent some 60% of all China DPRK trade, was previously a lot darker by night. For many years, the bridge was a symbol of North Korea's sorry strait. The Chinese side was brightly lit up, and the North Korea side was as dark as it gets, Lankov explained. But while a January 2017 photo clearly shows a difference in lighting between the two halves of the bridge, a September 2018 photo revealed just a few bulbs illuminated along the entire stretch of the bridge's main road or railway. And the informed source told NK News that during the worst days of late 2017's maximum pressure campaign, faulty lights on the North Korean side of the bridge were extremely slow to be repaired, meaning the bridge grew progressively darker. From time to time, the 1943-era Dandong Friendship Bridge has been closed totally for repairs. Striking photos from both November 2017 and September 2015 showed the damage that heavy traffic and related accidents had caused the structure. But by fixing lights only at night, backers of the project will have been able to avoid any extended and costly shutdowns of the bridge. Because of the bridge's narrow design, it is only suitable for one-way road and rail traffic, meaning the direction of traffic typically changes every 2 hours. So first, North Korean trucks drive into China, and then it comes time for Chinese trucks drive south to North Korea, wrote Dr. Andrei Lankov in a 2015 column on the subject. Due to the technical conditions of the old bridge, the maximum size of trucks is limited to 20 tons, and their speed must not exceed 5 kilometers an hour. It means that only about 300 to 500 trucks combined cross the border per day in both directions. It seems that trains are the real mover of cargo between the two sides, Lankov added. Given the sorry state of North Korea's motor roads, this is not surprising. A modern USD 350 million bridge connecting Dandong to an area near Sinyeoju in North Korea was completed in 2014, but is yet to be opened. Satellite imagery indicates that the North Korean side is yet to connect any infrastructure to it. No official reason has been given for the delay in opening the new bridge, but some analysts previously suggested it may have been linked to the cooling of relations between Beijing and Pyongyang, which followed the purge of Kim Jong-un's uncle, Jang Song-taek, in December 2013. And the final article for today comes from the BBC News, entitled Manchester United to Launch China Entertainment Centres. Premier League club Manchester United is to open a series of club-themed entertainment and experience centres in China, the club has said. The Old Trafford Club, which has millions of fans on Chinese social media, will partner Chinese property developer Harveys to build the centres. The first are scheduled to open in Beijing, Shanghai, and Shenyang by 2021. The Beijing Center will be built in the Chenmen Dashalian area next to the Forbidden City and Tiananmen Square. Fans who visit a center will be able to experience the thrill of a match day at Old Trafford, as well as learning about the history and heritage of Manchester United, the club said in a statement. The complexes will also include restaurants and club retail stores. We first visited China in 1975, and we're proud to have seen our fan base in the region grow and develop their passion for United over the years. This new concept will allow them to get closer to the club they love, said Manchester United's group managing director, Richard Arnold. Harvey's boss, Zhang Bo, said the centers would offer a fully immersive experience that entertains, educates, and inspires the next generation of football fans. The club last visited the country during the summer of 2016. The club's official TV channel, MUTV, is broadcast to more than 100 million viewers in China thanks to a tie-up with digital media platform Sina Sports. It makes MUTV programming available across numerous digital platforms. And according to Chinese-based sports agency Mailman Group, whose clients include Manchester United, the club has the largest online fan base of any overseas club in China. It says United has 9.3 million followers on Weibo, China's equivalent of Twitter, ahead of city rival Manchester City with 8.3 million followers. The club recently parted company with manager Jose Mourinho and sits sixth in the Premier League. It is still in the Champions League and FA Cup competitions. Well, that is everything for today. Thank you for listening, and be sure to check in next time for another episode of Yellow Star China News. And be sure to look at my Facebook page with the same name. Thank you, and see you again.